This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 216 in the series. The Franklin Board of Health met at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, March 4, 2020. It's interesting to note that while the coronavirus was amongst the key topics, the health director, Kathleen Liberty, was following the best practices and participated remotely as she was not feeling well. A good example to set for us all these days. You'll hear at the beginning of the meeting the phone dialing to bring her into the meeting. Chair Bridget Sweet opens the meeting. Members Tim Cochran and Jeff Harris participate. Ginny McNeil, the health agent, also contributes actively to the meeting. There is acknowledgement of a town council member who enters the room during the course of the meeting to sit and participate. In case you don't recognize his voice, for the record, I can say that it was Eamon Earls. The agenda document is linked to in the show notes. The new coronavirus information portal was discussed, and the link is included here as well. The meeting audio runs about 45 minutes, so without further ado, let's listen to the Board of Health meeting of March 4, 2020.
So I'm going to get it going.
Can you call her?
Yeah. Please.
Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Yeah.
We're all here.
All right, so it's 5 o'clock on Wednesday, March 4th. This meeting is being recorded. The listing of matters are those reasonably anticipated by the chair which may be discussed at the meeting. Not all items listed may in fact be discussed, and other items not listed may also be brought up for discussion to the extent permitted by law. So I have to go ahead and open up the March 4th Franklin Board of Health meeting. So the first item on the agenda is to read and accept the February 5th 2020 minutes. I think everyone had a chance to read them previously. Are there any comments?
No comments.
No comments.
So I have no comments either. I'd like to take a motion to accept the minutes as submitted.
Motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, so we have a 3-0. Vote to accept the minutes as submitted. Thank you. So the next item is a public hearing to address the Chapter 193-4 Keeping of Animal Regulations, restriction on number of fowl in application. So really the whole purpose of this was to keep our Board of Health regulations consistent with the zoning bylaw. So there was a small language amendment that we wanted to make for that, and I believe the way we wanted to go ahead and come up to you in a minute.
I have that.
I have it here.
Okay.
It's all right. You have it? I left it in the car. Sorry. So really we just wanted to go ahead and make sure that these were in line with the actual zoning regulations, because over the past year or so the zoning regulations had changed to reduce the amount, the footprint for animals, and then also to make the permitting application process more consistent. So there's really no additional restriction, just to keep everything sort of in line with what was previously decided.
Kathleen, you're there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Kathleen, anything else to add to that?
No. Sorry. No, nothing else.
So there's no additional resident, any discussion from the board prior to?
No additional comment.
Nope.
Do you need the actual?
Yep, sorry. Sorry, Kathleen, Jenny's just gonna get me the actual verbiage so I can go ahead and read that and have the board vote that in.
Right?
She's already gone, so I'm assuming she's out of here like a little.
I know. I'm so sorry.
I'm
the past few days. A bit of work.
No apologies needed. I'm just glad you're following the state advice to stay home with respiratory illness.
Yes.
Right? I mean, really, that's I know it's not corona, but again, if we're telling people to go ahead and stay home when they're sick, I think it's a great model that you're staying home when you're sick. Just saying.
Yes.
We're all dropping like flies over in our offices.
Bridget, yeah. This is the article, but I don't know if that's what you're looking for.
We don't have anything else.
Is that Jenny? Yeah.
What
did you say,
Jenny? All it had to be the legal notice.
Was it in the legal notice? Where else can I find it? Because I don't have. I wasn't at last meeting.
So you want to print it should be in the meeting minutes.
I don't see it.
I think the meeting minutes that were printed are from
These are February. That's why January. So let me pull up. Yeah. I have February's right here somewhere. I can get it. What's my name?
You need the January ones as well.
I need the February minutes. These are the January minutes, right?
Mm-hmm. No, because February is today. You're right.
You can stay.
But I'm not sure.
We gave the wrong minutes. Is that what I did?
Mm-hmm. Oh. No worries, my friend.
I can do it.
Have a seat. I got it.
You got it?
I put the wrong minutes in the pen.
You're fine.
All right, sorry, guys.
We're
a little disheveled tonight.
It's okay. We can all blame
the one man show's not working.
Yes.
So, part of what we wanted to discuss was that we wanted to make sure that Chapter 193, Section 4 should be in line with zoning restrictions of keeping a fowl. After the discussion, we recommended this include a citation in Chapter 193, Section 4 to the zoning board's already approved bylaw that the permit application cite the same. So that's really what we're looking for, is just to make sure that 193 Section 4 is in line with zoning restrictions keeping a fowl, and that we do have the permit application to cite the same citation. I've not seen a revised permit application, so if you guys could do that for the next meeting, so that we go ahead and, I don't think we need to vote on the actual permit application, we just want to go ahead and confirm that it is in line with the zoning, and make sure that we do have contiguous and sort of consistent language there.
Okay.
So I'd like to entertain a motion to go ahead and marry, for lack of a better word, the zoning regulation to the actual Board of Health regulation so that people have consistent information and they're not going back and forth between two different boards.
Yeah.
Move to marry the two.
It was good though, Tom. I think the whole thing.
Cool. All in favor?
Aye.
Awesome. So moving forward, 193-4, keeping of animal regulations will be the same as zoning, so that should reduce the redundancy or confusion from residents who are going to go ahead and request an animal permit application. Awesome, so we'll go ahead and close that public hearing.
Closed.
Awesome, sweet. Old business, any old business? I don't have anything. Does anyone else on the board have any old business?
No, no old business.
Nope.
Cool. So, new business. I'm gonna go to the future projection for the PSC contractual budget. Kathleen, do you have that information available? Do you want us to table that for a future meeting where you're out?
That's right, yeah.
Cool.
No,
I have it. So if you, I'm sure if you're looking at the health and the new page, the first page.
Yes, ma'am.
You'll see that sewage disposal permit is where we put our funds for the septic application. So we've taken in $21,675, and this is February, right, Jenny? Right.
Yeah, it's this fiscal year, so.
Just February.
That's since July 1st.
So July 1st, Kathleen.
July 1st to February.
Yeah, okay, perfect.
To today, yeah.
Till February, okay.
All right, so let's skip the second page, and then if you go over to the third page, that is
the debit.
No, go to the fourth page.
Yeah, I see it. The 18904.
Yeah. So if you want to look at the net budget of $25,000, that's what we get into budget line item pay for the contractual services. So basically, it's a wash. We've taken in over $21,000. We've paid over $18,000. And we have about a little over $6,000 left. So I think my recommendation to the board is just looking at this every month to see if we need to do a transfer from either another line item in our budget, or just try to take some out of the general fund. I really don't know the lay of the land yet with how that works, if they have to go through city council or what, but, April, we begin the installation of septic systems,
So I think we'll just have to revisit this every month, if that's okay with you, Bridget, and the board.
Yeah, so I think just my concern is that it looks like the $25,000 was allocated for this service, and if we've already spent out $19,000 and we still have April, May, June, and we...
Actually, February, we haven't even paid us. February, March.
So, but it...
We haven't paid February.
Okay, so if we still have those months left, and I know that installations don't really kick off hardcore until April, but I'm imagining based on sort of the bubble we're seeing, we're going to have a huge increase in use of PSE, which is fine as long as we're able to sort of continue to take in the disposal permit cost to kind of match that. So my concern is just that we had only allocated $25,000 a year for this service, and if we're only using that one line item to pay that, we're going to exceed that if we can't transfer from the sewage funds. So we can, or the sewage disposal permit. So we can just continue to monitor it. I can ask the town administrator as well, like if we do become to the point where we're going to overdraft on that one line item, what we can do moving forward. I think it's definitely a need to continue to discuss, because is this going to be a one-time building boom where we're going to have this challenge? Or is this something that our sewage disposal permit should be set up into a revolving fund to support paying out PSE? So I think those are just additional sort of discussion items. I know that building kind of ebbs and flows, but it seems like recently we've had a lot more building. So I don't, again, we can touch base with, you know, the town administration office, and then maybe even city council as necessary, because we want to make sure that if we have to continue to pay this contract out, we can do so in a timely manner, because we also don't want to hold up septic installations because we can't pay PSE.
Right, and an idea that I had from being in another city where we kind of put up a massive, is what's called Apex, massive.
Oh, I know Apex plan. Well, my friend.
Yeah, so even though the owner was paying for the building permit, they were also made to pay for a building commissioner on site. Not the building commissioner or the building inspectors from the department.
Okay.
And although I realized we're taking in money, like for this, so what I'm talking about is the big subdivision. So we have a massive subdivision like we did with on Maple Street, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to do, he being Wade, had to do 48 perk tests. I think if this continues down the line, that we should say, look, this $25,000 is for local. This is for the residents whose septics are failing, or, you know, this is the work that he has to do locally. And if the subdivisions are going to continue to rise, then they're going to have to pay for the local contractor. And I don't think that's unreasonable, because there could be several more subdivisions coming down the line.
Yeah.
And that's just a thought that I had where where I saw this happen, and this was this massive company was made to pay for, you know, a building commissioner to be on site, and I don't think it's unreasonable to ask, you know, so that's a thought that I've had.
Yeah, I've seen that in large, like you said, sort of more commercial type properties. I don't know that I've seen it mirrored as far as septic, but I can definitely look into it, and I'll just send a note to the town administration office, and we can also pull other areas that have had increases. I guess just the challenge here is that there are not a lot of towns that make subcontract out straight septic. So we can kind of do like a comparative analysis and see who else is doing what. I just want to make sure that if we only have that line item, that we're, you know, we're using it properly. So we should definitely, let's keep this on the next, you know, couple months agenda item, just so we can kind of watch the influx and decrease the debits as well, especially because I know the budget's only going to get leaner, so I just want to be really cognizant that we're aware of what that should be, and if we do have to move to a revolving fund, that we can start the process for that sooner rather than later, because I know it does take time for approval and time for the accounts to be set up for a revolving fund. So I just want to be mindful of that.
Okay, and I don't believe it's too late for me to ask for more money for 2021.
Okay.
budget either. And if we're looking at this now and possibly some new subdivision, I will definitely write a narrative, you know, that the board can support and send that to Jamie.
That'd be great.
No, that'd be helpful, because again, we just want to make sure that we're cognizant, and we don't want to be in a situation where we have people looking to build their lots if they're buildable, and we're not able to support that while we wait to scramble for more money. So, cool.
Okay.
Awesome. So we'll go ahead and move
thank
on
you.
To the, no, thank you, Kathleen. The 105 CMR 665 minimum standards for retail, sale of tobacco,
yeah.
electronic, nicotine, delivery systems. So I know you've given us the letter from the Department of Public Health dated February 19th. Is there anything else you want to share with us in regards to that?
Yeah, so originally this law was supposed to go into effect June 1st, but it appears the Public Health Council voted to finalize it and make the changes take effect on March 6th, which is Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that got moved up over several months. And, you know, we don't really have anything to worry about because we don't have any smoking bars.
Right.
And that's for on-site consumption only. But and everyone else seems to be in alignment with the 21 years of age
mm-hmm.
with the signage. And I think that's really all we have to worry about for the town of Franklin. And I know that you talked about thinking about maybe getting a little bit more restrictive, and so I'll hand that over to you, Bridget, if that's something that you want to do. But I'm not really sure how we could, but what are your thoughts?
I don't see how we could get any
more
restrictive than what's currently in place. I know that the initial conversation was to do it, you know, when communities were going more restrictive, they were trying to get ahead of the June 2020 deadline. But it looks like Public Health Council has sort of already done that for us with the changes taking effect March 6th. Are you and Ginny or one of you going to the Municipal Tobacco Control Conference on either March 23rd or March 25th?
Is that with DEP?
No, these are straight from DPH. One is in Holyoke and one is in Westboro. And it's through the Municipal Tobacco Control Council, and they're going to provide additional guidance and regulations.
I think I am going to the Westboro one. I'm
okay.
Not sure, Jenny, if we signed you up or not.
I don't think I did.
Okay, all right. I believe I'm signed up for that. There's like three of them coming up, so I wasn't really sure.
Yeah, so there's the MTCP one, then there's the DEP, which is
MHOA.
This month and next month, then there's MHOA CSP, which is this month and next month, and then there's the the Wastewater Conference for Just Title V next Wednesday in Taunton.
Okay.
So as long as someone is going to one of the tobacco one, I think that'd be really helpful. And are either one of you going to CSP?
So which one?
Mass Health Officer Association Community Sanitation Program, where they're
going to
do the camp updates and the pool updates. You're both going to that?
We're both going to that, April 4th, I believe, yeah.
That's cool, perfect.
Great.
And what about, is anyone going to the DEP one?
No, they're boring.
Yeah, I know. I didn't think. I'm with you. I just wanted to make sure that you guys, I don't judge. I totally dig it. All right, cool.
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to skip down new business and go over the Eversource Energy Vegetation Management Plan because I think that's easy. And that's really just
mostly
a formality.
It's mostly informational only.
So really what they do here is just give us the five-year vegetation management plan. It gives us an idea of where our operational plans are, what herbicides they're going to use, and it really is just sort of their due diligence and letting us know what's happening. And that way, the rights of way, when they're treated, we know exactly what herbicides or pesticides they've been using. So I'll pass this to you guys to review. But it's really just a formality. There's nothing we can do about it. They just file it with us as far as a matter of public record. And then, Kathleen, I know you're not feeling well, and I feel bad to make you keep talking, but just your update on the new business on the coronavirus disease update.
Yep, absolutely. So, so our marketing specialist met with Jamie the town administrator yesterday, and she actually created a coronavirus information portal, and that alert is on the Board Health webpage. I sent that to you, Bridget. I'm not sure if
oh, I saw it, and I love it, only yeah. because we...
Yeah, maybe you want to... Can you show everybody?
Sure.
That's cool.
So the reason why I like this particular method is because there's been a lot of misinformation and a lot of people creating their own information in regards to this. And what's happening is when communities are starting to create their own message, it's outdated. This is evolving so rapidly that it's you know, you could create an article now. I mean, yesterday we had 6 fatalities, today we had 9. Yesterday there were 80 confirmed cases in the United States. As of today at 4 o'clock printing, there's 147. So things are changing so rapidly. So if we decided to sort of create our own sort of fact sheet, it would quickly be out of date and it would really look a little bit silly. So what it, and I can't load the webpage because I'm in town hall, but what it looks like, do you have it? Cool. So what it looks like, Kathleen was able to provide information to our communication specialist. And what we're doing is literally just linking to the DPH website as well as the CDC website for the absolute most up-to-date and relevant information. And it's not to say that this department is passing the buck here, but again, DPH and CDC have the most up-to-date information. They're constantly updating, and quite honestly, we're only updated maybe once a day or every other day by conference calls from the state. So by allowing this particular ticker to sort of take place online, residents are able to click on these two links and get the absolute most up-to-date information as it's made available. I know we've had some conference calls this week at the local level, the state level, and again, the concern is that this information is evolving so rapidly that if we were to create our own FAQ page, it would be out of date within minutes. And there's a lot of misinformation. I think it's really important. And I know, Kathleen, you did a great podcast, and I know that was circulated as well. But I think it's really important that people understand that there is a difference between, you know, isolation and quarantine. And just because somebody's in self-isolation does not mean that they have coronavirus and they're running around licking all the hand, you know, doorknobs and getting everybody sick. There's just a lot of fear right now, and I understand. I mean, I get it. We were both actively involved in the H1N1 outbreak 10 years ago, right? Both working in public health. So I just think it's really, really important that people are encouraged to look at these two resources that you provided with Emory, communications, the town administration office. If they do have questions, they feel free to contact the office and we can help them get to the right resources. But really the best thing to do is to wash your hands and stay home if you're sick.
Right. And she's also going to be pushing this through Facebook, Twitter, and the town blog.
Sweet.
So, and I'll be alerting her basically every day about what's changed and what happened. And just a side note, in talking about emergency like this or H1N1, Ginny, myself, and the fire chief and a few of his people met with our emergency preparedness staff at the high school where we built basically, you know, emergency preparedness plan. So we're in good shape as far as that goes because we have a new fire chief as well.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the incident commander. And, you know, the way we had a lay of the land of the school, the blueprint, if you will. And so we took time and went through the whole thing. It's a really good plan. So that's in place just in case it's needed. And as far as like our supplies, we already spoke with facilities, and Jenny knows this. We have a place at DPW, so we can start ordering our gloves and masks and things like that to have on hand in case the spiral's out of control. So you know, we're as usual working in the shadows, but I just want you to let you know that you know we have a plan in place. And God forbid if anything does go sideways with the, you know, COVID-19, that we should be in pretty good shape.
And I just think it's important to reiterate that the guidance from the DPH is that we are not recommending, and the health department and Board of Health are not recommending that people wear masks in public, because there is no, it is sort of a negative connotation. People aren't wearing them properly, they're not necessarily suited for the task, and they're sort of creating more risk of cross-contamination. And really the idea of the mask is to prevent someone who is already ill from getting someone else ill. It's not going to prevent someone from getting sick. So there's sort of this misperception there. So just making sure that all that information is available. And again, with the portal that you've created, I think it's important too that people continue to monitor the CDC website. Because again, the way the CDC website is listed, it's level 3, level 2, level 1, with level 3 being the warning level 3 of those countries that have sort of been red flagged. And then if you've traveled to those countries, that you do self-isolate and self-monitor their own health. But that listing could change. So countries that are listed as level 2 could maybe, in theory, and I mean, this is again, maybe, be listed as level 3 tomorrow. So we just want everyone to sort of be apprised and to check the links that have been provided on to the town website as far as coronavirus.
And I'm sure everyone knows that the state is, that the CDC is allowing the state to stop testing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Just a couple of questions. Have you noticed an increase in volume for public contact with questions about this at this point, or is it?
Go ahead, Lauren.
No, that was it.
Well, Jenny, let's speak to that. You got quite a few calls on Monday, right?
We get calls every day. Someone's asking for advice, but
okay.
You know.
I've been out, so.
Sure.
She's been out since Monday.
But
I'd say one or two calls a day.
Okay.
And mostly people, like today was the person from the Y wants to know if there's anything he should do that's not on the website. Yesterday was Monday was Tri-County. They just reach out to see if there's something extra they should be doing. You know?
There's also an article published today on Food Safety News that there is no association. I know there's a lot of concern that COVID-19 could be spread through food handling, and there has been no association through Rutgers or North Carolina State Extension that this would be spread through food handling. So that risk is low. So obviously if you licked your finger and stuck your finger in your nose and did whatever else and touch someone's food, which you can't do anyway when you're food handling. We've seen it all. But again, you know, this is not one of the reportable illnesses that we're looking for. So as long as, you know, establishments are following food employee reporting practices, this is not, in theory, supposed to be able to spread through food handling and through food service. So I think that's important to note as well. So maybe we could send that link over to the portal as well. It's through Food Safety News, and it was published by Dr. Ben Chapman and Dr. Don Schaffner. And they're both.
Could you send that to me?
I sure can.
Thank you. One other note, you might hear drips and drabs, throughout the town. The fire chief was concerned that if they got a 911 call, they wouldn't know if they were going to, someone who was in quarantine. So as of yesterday, the VNA nurse will be asking people who are under surveillance, which means they're quarantined, if we can provide the address to the fire department of where they're located, not their names, just the addresses. So moving forward, if the people who are, in quarantine say yes, then the fire department will be notified. If they say no, then they say no. But we're doing everything we can to keep everyone protected. I just want to let you guys know that too.
Yep, and the rationale between the yes and the no here is because we want to make sure that we're not impeding on any possible HIPAA violations.
Right.
Correct. Just to make sure that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, just the address, no name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it. I'll update all of you if anything happens.
If I may add, Kathleen, Steve Sherlock here. I hope you're feeling better soon, and let me know, because certainly our topic was going to be a hot one for this week.
Say that again. What?
Our topic for this week was going to be a hot one, so.
No, thank you. By the way, I had to cancel my podcast for yesterday, obviously. I had to go home, but I will be doing a podcast next week on COVID-19, so I'll send you the link when that's done.
Cool. Great.
Yeah. And I did meet coincidentally with the fire chief today. He had a nice 40 plus minutes. So he touched on emergency preparedness, et cetera, awesome. Amongst some other things. So that'll be coming out probably before the next other health one. But certainly as you have other things, and I'll certainly share the portal because that just came out today. So from a Franklin Matters, you know, TV radio perspective, we'll do whatever we can to share the appropriate information and
I think it's really important to stick with the portal again because we don't want to craft our own message and have it be outdated.
No,
but with the portal being underneath Monica Burrell's guidance and DPH as well as CDC and updating real time, that will give all residents all the information that we have at this time. And we also want to be really cautious as well. There was a faux pas in Newton. Did you get that email? So there was definitely some misinformation in Newton, and they've come along, you know, they've reached out to all the towns that it's impacted, but they had a lot of struggles with their school department and a lot of misinformation. And misinformation is more dangerous than too much information. Mm-hmm. So by linking these two resources, I think we're doing, you know, our due diligence, but we also don't want to create false panic. We don't want to create a false narrative. We don't want people to think that a school has been closed or there are students impacted if that's not the case.
Absolutely.
And there's been a lot of work done in the space for other towns to make sure that all of this directive comes out of the health department's office and, you know, the appropriate town administration office as well. So we have to be really, really cautious with that message. Kathleen, I don't know if you got that email from Newton. I'll forward it to you.
I did not, but I heard that was one of the questions yesterday at the conference.
Yeah.
That was incorrect.
Yeah, so
wow.
I think I could find anything on Town Hall. No.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they had a let me pull it up. Can't spell. Hold on, give me 2 seconds. Letter from Newton. Alright, cool. So again, their challenge here, there was sort of a reference to the fact that Newton North High School was closed due to COVID-19, which never happened. It was never considered for closure, but again, that information got out there into the public space and people started to sort of panic and do like a run on the health department. There was a group of students who had returned from a school-sponsored Italian exchange program. Again, they were self-isolating. They were doing all sort of the correct things. They were working closely with the epidemiologist team on call at MDPH, so I want people to realize that as well, that we do have the ability to talk to MDPH, which is the Mass Department of Public Health, at any time. They are on call 24 hours a day. They do support all health departments with these decisions. And what they did in Newton was they decided to delay the students' return to school, hoping to gather more information. So they did actually exclude the students for 14 days. They kept them in a group. They were not allowed to return to school. And again, there was just a lot of additional sort of misinformation speaking to that. So they did submit a letter of what they sort of sent to all the Italy students. This is a problem not just here, but we're seeing the same thing in Rhode Island. And what's happening is that students are being sort of like ridiculed and bullied for not being in school or for being in school when they shouldn't be in school. So we want to be really mindful that there's a lot more than just, you know, an isolation and quarantine at stake. Again, push the hand washing, get people to actually understand the self-isolation, and that self-isolation does not mean that someone does have COVID-19. So we just want to be mindful of that as well.
Okay.
But again, I think that the way the website's set up to have that most pertinent information will be helpful.
Yeah.
I think whatever you can share, Steve, will be helpful as well.
Mm-hmm.
People read that often.
Yep.
And we have another guest. Counselor, would you like to share anything else?
Nothing at this time, mostly just listen again.
Okay. Cool. All right. So we just want to make sure, again, that the information is consistent. We don't want to have, as we said before, we don't want to have an outdated message. As we've seen, it's been progressing very rapidly. We went from 0 fatalities to 9 in a short period of time, and that was just as of 4 o'clock this afternoon. But I think people also need to be mindful of is that while this is new and novel and a little bit scary, the flu is still a bigger problem.
Well, I was going to say that. And we have to still worry about the flu.
So we still, and the good news is that whatever you're doing to protect yourself from COVID-19 is technically also, you know, respiratory, you know, flu-wise, but I know that this is new and scary and different, but we still want to make sure that we're practicing good hand hygiene, good healthy habits, staying home when we're sick, keeping our kids home when they're sick, and just really respecting sort of you know, each other's space as well as our own space, because we don't want to continue to spread cooties. That's the technical term. That's what I use in public health. Cooties.
I was brought up with that.
Well, it's, you know.
All right. And my fingers curl.
Right. Anything else on COVID-19? Nothing from you. And again, I'd like to say thank you for staying home when you're sick.
Yes.
Way to model that. Way to model that behavior.
Set a model example.
So then we have the House Director's report. Pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah. So Jenny inspected 15 restaurants this month, and the month of February, and she inspected 15 restaurants. And then moving down, we did receive a complaint from the fire department. They were called out for something unrelated, and they observed raw chicken stored improperly on the kitchen floor at Hang Thai. So Jenny did go out there and do some, Jenny, you can speak to it, but I think Jenny had to remove all the chicken that was.
Yeah, so anything that was, because they said that chicken was marinating on the floor, they got called out in the middle of the night, and like they left the chicken in the kitchen floor. So any chicken that was marinating in the refrigerator, I made them throw it away.
Well,
and
I
probably jotted.
Yay to the fire department for letting us know that there was some uncouth behavior happening.
So usually when you do something like that, you get their attention, whether I threw out the right chicken or not, who knows.
Okay.
I mean, but because they're trying to tell me it wasn't that chicken, and you know they're trying to, you know, and I did pour the bleach, so we couldn't take it up.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Then if you move over to the middle row pre-operation inspections, Jenny opened up a new restaurant called Mercy, and an existing pizza place, 360 Pizza, with new owners.
Switched in,
Then general complaints, Shiva, we had a overflowing dumpster, doesn't even cover it, how bad it was back there, but after a few threatening phone calls from me, they got it all situated, and I don't know what was happening over there, but it was probably the worst I've ever seen. So we got rid of that. 27 Winter Street, it's an abandoned property. We got a complaint about trash. So basically, I had sent an order to correct letter to the owner, but there's also a property management company taking care of that, so that's going to be a bit of a haul to get that place cleaned up, but that's all right. We also had mice at Shaw's. Jenny went to do an inspection and talk to the, manager, and they're aware that they have a problem. Jenny, what was it from
Yeah, when they did the renovations, I think they might have come in then with the renovations, but they're actively working on it. Like, they
once a week or
no, they had people there because. People have seen them like run down.
Yeah, someone told me they saw.
Yeah, so I mean they're actively. They don't want the mice either. So they were had people there when I was there trying to work on. They thought they've figured out where they were coming in.
Anything in the prepared food areas or just in the aisles?
Someone saw it in the frozen food aisle. I mean, who knows?
All right. Did you ask them just to remit their reports on a weekly basis?
I didn't, but I
can.
Yeah,
can you reach out to them and make sure they're submitting the reports? Because what happens sometimes when there's a problem like that is that corrective actions from the operator may not be, it could be like a dual thing. So Shaw's could be blaming pest control could be blaming Shaw's. So we can just look at it and figure out where the gap is. And a lot of times too in grocery stores when they do renovations like that, they're when they were designed, there was like mice condos. So they weren't designed properly to have no voids, and if they're old voids that they didn't know about, this could be where they're coming from.
Yeah, I have them on my list this month, so I'll get all that for you.
Awesome. All right, Dunkin' Donuts?
Yeah, well, we think it was a disgruntled employee, but nonetheless, Jenny went out there to talk to the manager that,
he was smoking and then going in with the washing of his hands. Yeah, he's going to the dumpster, bringing out the trash, not washing his hands, bare hair in contact with the foods, and something else was screamed employee, but I forget what the other complaint was. It just sounded like one customer could not have witnessed everything that this person saw.
Sounds good.
Sitting outside his car watch.
Allegedly they're a drive-up, but they could have seen everything because there was something else they saw too. I don't know.
Went to the bathroom with a washer.
Yeah, everything. He was doing it all.
Software demo, was that Food Co. Pro?
The tenant signed the contract, so we're now the contacted list relevant, and we have the new software system, so Jenny and I, not sure when we'll start training, but it's, you know, it's all moving quickly, so that's awesome. So,
that's great.
Are we going to use relevant for food, pools, and housing?
Yes.
Yep.
I'm glad you like it.
We're very excited. I mean, I got to tell you, it's so refreshing to work with a town administrator and a board of health that want to get on board with software, and how easy this is going to make Ginny's life and her work life, actually.
She needs a smaller office now.
Might be ease of it all, but it's going to make us a smaller professional in the field. And so I'm thrilled that after 3 months that this has all happened.
Yep.
Absolutely thrilled.
Well, it's commendable. The spearheading this so early on is showing dividends, and it obviously will make an enormous difference going forward.
I think you'll see an increase in compliance as far as food inspections as well, because the software allows for a much more comprehensive inspection with pictures and images. And it's so easy to use the carbon copy form and then say, well, you meant this corner and I meant this corner. When there's a picture accompanying that in the form, there is no confusion.
Right.
And pictures say 1,000 words, right? So now that we have to have a sign on establishments that say your most recent inspection is available upon request, which has always been the case, but people didn't know that, people are going to take this a lot more seriously, I think. And I think as far as compliance for you, you'll see an increase. But I also think as far as ease of use in housing inspections, being able to pull up the most recent inspection from your iPad without bringing a paper folder, I just think, and even as far as pools, I think you're going to see, I think the learning curve, maybe in the beginning, will take a little bit longer. But I also think the new food code will be so much easier now that you have it all at your fingertips.
And
you literally
down.
Pick it. You're like, hello, and it's like, hi, how are you? And it tells you exactly what you need to know. So I think that as far as yours, I think maybe the first 3 months, all your inspections will be a little bit longer. But after that, I think it'll be machines.
God, I can't wait. We can't wait. We're so excited. So that's great. That's a new beginning. So we'll go back up to the retail, to the third column. The dollar store, brand new store opened up. Jenny opened them, and they opened last week. Let's see. And moving down pool. That's just a regular routine inspection at half one suite. For tests at 3 Abbey Road, and then 7 Jacks Way, septic system failed, so we allowed the new system to be installed. And then the other septic inspections done by a contractor. There's, you know, 4 places, you don't have to read them to you. So I mean, we're staying busy on top of everything else. So, does anyone have any questions about these inspections or anything?
No.
No.
The other thing, the only other thing I wanted to touch on for the software demo is that if you guys see the library, and Relevant usually has a library, if you go do an inspection and there is someone that doesn't have a vomit response plan or someone that doesn't have the allergen poster, you can actually send it right from there. And that will also eventually build your compliance as well. So make sure you speak to your consultant about that and make sure you have that access. And then what happens is you get greater continuity, greater customer service, and overall better protection of public health, because all those minimum requirements are met. So all that stuff is available, and you can share it right with them from your iPad. It's pretty comprehensive, and I'm sure it's similar to the pool stuff, pool signage, things like that. And I know this is new business, but offline, Kathleen, I have huge checklists for pools that I just made, so I'll send them to you. You don't have to use them, but they might be user-friendly, and it talks about all the signage, all the first aid kit pieces, so that, and then there's the additional self-inspection form, so that when people aren't, they have to do it all themselves, so you don't have to do it all twice. I'll forward it over to you.
Is that part of the software program?
No, I just did it because I was having a lot of problems somewhere else. I can just send it to you, and you can PDF it and put it as part of the software, and you can email it as you go. But by having a self-assessment, I was finding less violations after inspections because people were doing it, because they were doing it before we got there. They were doing their own pre-inspection, saving time rather than have you go all 5 times.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Well, the other thing too, just a quick note on that. Once we start rolling and doing inspections a year, 2-3 out, we'll be able to run report.
I know, I love it. I'm so excited.
Yeah, which is so, you know, which is that in itself is going to be so exciting. So, you know, so this isn't just there out here now. Like, this just, this affects us right down the road, which is great.
No, and I think too, like you said, running the year-over-year reports to figure out what the big whether it's big five, you know,
yeah.
factors or 10, you can then incorporate that into either a future podcast or a future, you know, televised event. Say, listen, you know, yep, person in charge training, active manager control training. There's so much opportunity once you know what the ticket items are, whether it's quick service, casual, or full service. You can at least kind of dial in and again make more information available to the operators. Because
right.
I don't think people set out to do things wrong. I think they just get overwhelmed. So if we can figure out what those hot buttons are before it spirals, we can provide more information and make it more user-friendly for everyone involved.
Excellent.
Awesome. Anything else?
No, just thank you for letting me call in. I appreciate it, really, I do.
Please.
Not a question. I just put my two fingers over my face so I didn't get your cootie, so I'm good. All right, so if there's no citizens' commentary, I would like to entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Awesome. All right, we all in favor.
Aye.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank
feel
you.
Better.
Yes, feel better, Kathleen.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends or neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008. In used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.